Wisconsin Eye is at the Milwaukee Public Library. We're talking to Mr. Gus Ramirez. He's the chairman of Husco International, and he has a vision for a major new school on Milwaukee's south side. Mr. Ramirez, thank you so much for talking to Wisconsin Eye. Congratulations, 2015 Business Leader of the Year. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Tell us about your plans for St. Augustine Prep Academy on the south side. I've heard some big numbers in terms of $50 million for the first phase, but go ahead, please, sir.
The real question is why.
Yes.
Why is our family and company investing a very significant amount? It will be ultimately $80 million total to build a school, of which we would plan to raise $20 million of that. So the family's going to put in about $60 million. So why this school?
Yes.
In our view, there are some existential threats to America. And unlike most people, I don't believe it's ISIS. I don't believe it's immigration. Those are solvable problems. Once we get the desire and energy to solve them, we can solve them. But there are some other issues that will impact who this country is and what happens in its future. The number one is the breakup of the American family. This is happening in a very acute form in urban areas, but it's really happening throughout the country. And the family unit is essential for economic success, well-being, success of kids, and unfortunately, it's dissolving in many places. In the African-American community now in cities, in Milwaukee, for instance, about 77% of kids are born to single-parent families. And there's no way to be successful with kids. It's hard to raise kids when there's two of you, much less when there's only one. The second issue that's existential is the loss of faith in the millennial community. For the first time in our history, we have a millennial generation whose faith walk is unlike any we've ever had before. It compares to England or the Northwest, in Oregon and Washington, where less than 10% of people are active practicing Christians. This society was created based on Judeo-Christian principles. And if we lose that, we lose our identity of who American is and the protection that comes from a group of people that have a sense of values in terms of obeying, complying with laws, doing what is right, being generous with other less fortunate. If one loses that, one loses who America is. So the loss of faith in the millennials is really very serious. The third one is the education issue. And people tend to think about urban education, but it's really education throughout America. We've gone from being the top country in the world educationally 50, 60 years ago to now being about number 30 amongst developed and developing countries. And that's a real threat to our economic prosperity. If we don't have the skills being developed to fill the jobs of the future, America's economic prosperity will be in jeopardy. As I said, people tend to think about urban education and the problems there, and they are very, very significant. But our suburban school systems aren't anywhere near what they need to be given the social demographic characteristics of that system. In terms of urban education, as you know, Milwaukee is one of the most broken cities in the country. And my family and I have been working on this issue now for almost 30 years in various aspects. About 6 years ago, my daughter was a co-founder of Schools at Can Milwaukee, and they're making a huge difference. They're now working with 40 schools and about 16,000 kids to really help those schools transform themselves. Our family has worked directly with St. Marcus, which is a wonderful school on the north side, Milwaukee College Prep, again, a wonderful school. Carmen, really the only game in town, is a charter school, part of MPS, by the way. And the United Community Center, which has grown from 400 or 500 students to almost 1,600 students. And its academic results are just astounding. So we know there's a way to deliver education effectively. Why the South Side and why this school? As we looked at the South Side, we recognized that there's only Carmen and Reagan as really good schools. And those two schools last year turned down about 1,100 students for ninth grade. That's a huge number. And those students, in terms of options, public school options have four schools whose ACT scores in 12th grade are roughly between 12.5 and 15. To put that in comparison, our 8th graders at UCC graduate with ACT scores of 16.5. To go to a college or university, it's a minimum of 22. So on average, our kids in these four MPS schools in the South Side are 7 points below the minimum to go to college. So if you don't get into Carmen and Reagan, you're in essence, your chances of being successful is minimal.
Carmen and Reagan turned down 1,100 students, sir?
That's correct, in ninth grade.
And those students had no other real choices in their neighborhoods?
There are other schools, parochial schools, but the four public schools, which would be the most obvious choices, are the ones that I'm really referring to. Bayview, Pulaski, Bradley Tech, South Division, all these schools are, relatively speaking, inadequately performing schools.
So you envision St. Augustine Prep would stand in the gap for in each of these factors that you've just cited, correct, sir?
Correct. I think the fourth existential threat is our debt, our public debt. Excuse me. And we can't solve that. That's a bigger issue. However, in terms of faith, families, intact families, and excellence in education, that's something that we can certainly do. Excuse me.
Yes, sir.
So, what are we doing different in the school? First of all, it's going to be a magnificent facility.
Yes, I've seen
our focus is going to be
your architectural design. It looks very lovely, sir.
It's moving very quickly, so you can go see it in progress right now. What we're trying to do is not only create an academically excellent school, but using athletics and performing arts to develop the values, the disciplines, the toughness, the grit that it takes to be successful in life. So the academics are a given, but we're also going to have a very competitive environment from an athletic perspective, and the performing arts, whether it be speech or music or whatever, are going to be at a very high level. And we know no other school in the city that will have the breadth of what we're doing, serving the type of community we'll be serving on the South Side.
Has it cleared all the developmental hurdles, and have all the local zoning and everybody else signed off on it, sir? Are you now in the ground?
We're not only in the ground, we're way above the ground.
Okay, maybe we
should. As I said, you need to go see it.
Yes, we do.
It's a phenomenal structure, and it's going up faster than I envisioned. Structural steel will be complete by September, will be enclosed by November, and we'll be ready to go next June.
You envision a K-12 school when you open with how many students, sir?
We're going to open up with about 500 students. There is a possibility we might increase that, but at this point, that is our plan. K through second, and then sixth grade, and then ninth grade.
And you envision a second phase, and your anticipated time you would build the second phase, sir? And how would the second phase enhance your facility?
We'll start the second phase probably 4 years after we commence in 2017, so around 2021. What that will look like will be somewhat dependent on what we perceive the need. It could be all high school, or it could be 50-50 like the current school is, 50% elementary, 50% high school. Currently, we feed a third of the students that the high school has will come from our eighth grade, and two-thirds from the community. And that's by design, because the community needs the capacity. But we also need the culture that's built up through elementary school to infuse the high school. So we think that aspect is important as well. But if we discover that the real needs 4 years hence is high school, then we'll make the new 1,000 seats be high school seats.
What percentage of the students do you anticipate being Hispanics?
You know, it's hard to say. We've done some surveys in the community. My guess is around 70%.
70%.
Yeah.
And what about the balance of, I assume that the school would participate in the choice program. Do you envision that?
Yeah, we will be a choice school. So
okay.
We let in basically whoever applies. If we hit the maximum students we can take, then it goes, all students go into a lottery. And that will happen, I suspect, its first year. We believe will be oversubscribed in every grade.
And what do you anticipate to be the balance between tuition and funds through the choice program?
Virtually every student will be choice. Tuition will just be too expensive for people in the South Side. So it would be an extraordinary family that would, I mean, it would be less than university school and Brookfield Academy, but it will still be probably, you know, we haven't said it yet, but between $8,000 and $9,000 per student. That's a lot of money after taxes.
And the parents here, since you'd be participating in choice, how much of that $8,000 or $9,000 per student would they have to come up with, sir?
All of it, if they come up with tuition. The choice schools, choice students go there for nothing.
Okay, yes.
Okay, the cost of educating these students can be between probably around $9,500 aggregate, average high school, elementary school. So the school will have the responsibility of basically raising $1,500 per student each year.
The choice program, the voucher program, has been around in Milwaukee for more than 25 years. Do you think it's been a success?
Some have been successful, some not. We have several things we can do to transform Milwaukee education. It's not that complicated, and I'll tell you what they are. Number one is mandatory summer school. If you make summer school mandatory, it solves a whole slew of problems for kids during the summer. Kids get in trouble, they don't have anything to do, they regress basically one day for every 2 days they're out. So in summer, they regress 6 weeks. Put in mandatory summer school, as we put in at United Community Center, you pick up two of the three-year gap that exists in eighth grade. It's low-hanging fruit. I've talked to the governor about it, the mayor, they all agree, the head of the DPI, we're all aligned on the need for this, and it's a question of how do we make it happen. The second, and equally important, which deals with the answer to your question, is accountability. The state sends $8,000 roughly for choice and charter,
yes,
to the city, and $10,000 for public schools. There is no accountability for that money. So you can have a school be a pitiful school, and every year continues to get, if it's a choice school, continues to get $8,000. If it's a public school, it's $10,000. If it's a charter, and charter does have some governance associated with it, so they don't have as big a problem as the choice. But choice has no governance associated with it. So we think accountability for all schools is essential. And our proposal to politicians has been that you have like a three-year process. You set some standards, appropriate standards of performance for the school. You eliminate the special need kids and separate them out because the percentage of those in a particular school can impact scores immensely. So you just recognize that's a special category that's got to be treated separately. Mm-hmm. And you look at the non-special need kids' scores. And if they're unsatisfactory the first year, they get a warning. The second year, if they're choice and charter, they get DOT money, $500 to $1,000 per student. The third year, they're closed. If they don't make the required improvements, they're closed. And they don't get money from the state. They may continue operating, but they get no money from the state, which means they'll effectively close. For a public school, same thing. You won't take money away from them. You get first warning, second warning, school is closed. Then the school is auctioned. The independent commission will auction the school to operators, including MPS, who would bid on the school. The students would be transferred to other schools, and then that building would be auctioned to operators who would present a plan to a commission, and the best plan would get the school at nominal charge. So and if you establish accountability, you'll get improvement, because what gets really measured and acted on always improves. And that's what's going to happen on the South Side with Augustine Prep. All the schools around are going to recognize if they don't up their game, they're going to lose too many students to Augustine Prep. So they have to. They have to up their game, and we're going to see that. We've already seen some of it already.
How come public schools have, to a large extent, to a tragic extent, failed Hispanics? Well, failed their students, sir, in general.
Not failed just the, all their students.
All their students.
Very good question. I think the root cause lies in there's two root causes, and they're related. One is the strength of the union, which opposes the transformation of schools that's needed. And the second is governance. We have a governance structure where you can have the greatest superintendent in the world, but they can get nothing done. We have a micromanaging board of directors for these schools, and they're elected at crazy times. They're elected by districts, and oftentimes the union is able to control the outcome. So you have the poor superintendent between the school board and the school union, and they can't get anything done. You have to change that model. We have to go for at least 10-year time frame at a largely appointed board. Let's say you have 9 people. 2 could be elected citywide, mm-hmm. and 7 would be appointed. It could be the governor, it could be the legislature, it could be the common council, the mayor, MMAC, maybe the university system, would have appointments to it. And people would not be paid other than expenditures.
Okay.
And instead of meeting every month, they meet once a quarter, and they would be held accountable. Their job would be to hold the superintendent accountable for academic performance and fiscal responsibility. That's the 2 things they would focus on. So it would be like a board of directors of a business. And what that would allow is much better superintendents. The current one is pretty good. She just can't do anything. And that's what we have run into. I've known most of the superintendents. And the great frustration is they can't move the needle. And after 3-4 years, they leave. It's just too frustrating a job. So you got to deal with governance. So again, the 3 solutions: mandatory summer school, mm-hmm. accountability for all schools, and governance change for MPS. If you do that, in 10 years, Milwaukee will have one of the best urban educations in the country, and this will become a destination city instead of having our brilliant young people flee because it's not a place to raise their family in a public school environment.
What will be the governing structure for St. Augustine Prep?
Good question. We have a superintendent who's in charge of the school. He's going to have 2 principals, initially 3 principals, eventually reporting to him, and a high school, an elementary, and eventually a middle school principal. A CFO will report to him. A community engagement manager will report to him. The director of spiritual development will report to him, and the athletic director will report to him. He will report to a board that has 2 aspects. We have an advisory board made up of mostly educational experts, and then a governance board of about 6 people currently. We'll expand that to about 8 or 9 in the next 12 to 18 months, who's responsible for effective fiscal governance, the organizational performance, school performance, those sorts of issues. The governance board will hold the superintendent accountable.
And how will your search for teachers for your prep be different than what goes on at other private schools, charter schools, or even MPS schools, sir?
Good question. One, we're going to pay a premium.
You are.
We're going to have a longer school year, longer school day, and we plan to pay a premium versus starting salaries for any of the other schools. Our requirement for excellence is going to be extremely high. We've already had people come to us, but the recruiting won't start in earnest till September, through next February. In some cases, we'll do national searches. We'll search very strongly and intensively in Chicago, and we expect to maybe get 1/2 of our teachers locally and 1/2 from outside Milwaukee area.
Do you think your teachers will be paid 30%, 50% more than MPS teachers?
We'll pay a premium that will allow us to recruit the best.
Okay.
Will
your prep school have special needs, special ed students, sir?
Yeah, by law, we take any student who applies. And we have a staff plan that includes dealing with special need kids.
This is a very grand vision. Congratulations on a grand vision. How do you envision it changing education in the Milwaukee area 5, 6, 7 years out, sir?
Another good question. It's going to change the Milwaukee area education because it's going to become a model for what can be done. And it's going to be a model not only for Milwaukee but for the country as a whole. This is going to be a place that will have academic, athletic, and arts accomplishments that aren't duplicated in other places. It will show what minority kids, mostly minority kids, can do if given the opportunity to have a great education.
How do you feel about the argument in the Capitol, which I've heard for decades now, that funding the choice and voucher program amounts to setting up a second school system in Wisconsin? Can you respond to that, sir?
Yeah. We actually have choice and charter and MPS are all public schools because they all rely on public monies to operate. They're just different labels. A choice school is a public school because it's getting, in our case, roughly 85% of the funds to educate the kids mm-hmm. come from the state. And we're responsible to this state as an entity who is getting money from the state. At least we feel that responsibility. Some don't. That's why accountability is critical. So we're all public schools. We just have different labels, different types of public schools. The choice in charter creates competition for the traditional public school system. And that's needed because obviously the performance of the traditional public school system is not at the level that it needs to be. Now, as I said before, there are a lot of charter schools and choice schools that are horrific. And we've got to solve that problem. Right. The state can't send money to these schools and have them not perform. It's a travesty.
Some candidates I interview talk about choice schools that close in the middle of the night, leaving their students high and dry. Now, but you have set what appears to me some incredibly high standards, accountability standards for your prep school, correct?
Not only for our school, we're pushing it for every school. Every school throughout the state ought to be accountable. And when the government sends as much money as they do to educate children, they should have strings attached. The strings aren't what's taught in the school, but accountability relative to performance. And it's a travesty that we've let it go for so many years and have let these really pitiful schools continue operating year after year after year.
I understand the academic goals, but let's go back to your first one. How will your prep school help with the breakup of the family, sir?
Good question. We have one of our positions, the community engagement manager. And one of the things we're going to do is teach families. We're going to engage all the families that go to this school. We're going to teach them the importance of family and why having a family unit is so critical to economic success and family well-being. We're going to teach them how to navigate governmental systems. We are partnering with Wheaton, who's going to teach them how to navigate the medical system. And we're going to engage these parents. And when you come to our school, not only are the kids going to be educated, but the parents will be educated. And on the south side, luckily, there is mostly intact families, not 100%, mm-hmm. but a larger percentage than the north side. So what we want to do is strengthen those family bonds and have them appreciate how critical it is. If you have faith and you have family and you have a good education, your economic well-being is insured and your spiritual well-being is insured.
How much of your plan for Augustine Prep is driven by your personal middle school and high school experience, sir?
I would say my high school experience.
High school experience.
Why? Had a lot to do with it because okay. I went to a superb high school and saw what it could do. And you could be superb in every facet of performance at a high school. And as I looked at that high school, I said, you know, why can't we do that in Milwaukee? And that is part of it. But clearly, education opened doors for me. I came to this country as a five-year-old. My dad was an Army officer, U.S. Army officer. We moved my first 10 years of life. I was basically in four different locations, three different countries, mm-hmm. three different languages. And education allowed me to use that experience to broaden my horizon and realize that there are no limits in this country. We're the great American story. Parents didn't have a lot of money. Today, our wealth is way beyond anything we ever dreamed of. And our real responsibility is what we do with this wealth. And Augustine Prep is only part of what we do. But the point is, education is the door opener. And we want to open doors for at least 250 kids every year leaving our school and becoming useful people in society.
Those are the workers, the productive workers of the next generation, correct?
Absolutely.
So then going back to your experience with Husco International, I'm curious, why do we hear the term skills gap, sir, since Husco is such a specialized field with so many engineers? What's your feelings on the skills gap?
It's huge. And the issue is what happens when the boomers retire?
Yes.
We don't have a population coming up underneath that can replace the skills of the people retiring. So what do you have to do? If you're in manufacturing like us, you automate everything you can automate. You take a look at where your factories are located, and you look at the balance and the demographics in each location, and you try to make sure that we have enough skills coming up through our factories and the requisite technicians to run the factories. Mm-hmm. And if we don't have them, we've got to grow them. If we can't grow them here, we'll grow them elsewhere.
Look 10 years out. St. Augustine Prep will be a success if, 10 years from now, sir.
It'll be a success in the first year of its
operation. First year, okay.
It'll be a bigger success in 10 years.
Okay. I'm just curious, given your tremendous experience, The debate over immigration nationally, sir, what are your feelings on immigration?
It's an issue that should have been resolved. It's not hard to resolve. Just takes some reasonable people getting around the table. It was close to being resolved under Bush, but then they had a summer recess, and legislators went back, and the unions and right. people like Obama came out against immigration reform. Mm-hmm. Under Obama, he had 2 years where he could have passed immigration reform in 3 days. He controlled Congress, controlled the executive branch. He chose not to pass immigration reform, to keep it as a political issue, with the idea that as long as we have immigration as an issue, it helps the Democratic Party. The reality is we're not going to ship 11 million people back. We got to find a way to legalize, not pathway to citizenship, but to legalize responsible people who have been here a requisite time. And through that legalization process, we actually create more mobility in the immigration community to go back. A lot of these people like to go back, and but they're afraid to go back because they can't get back in. So by creating a legal status and a very long process for citizenship, if you're not born here and you came here legally, maybe 20 years, but a very long process to achieve citizenship, one that requires testing, maybe even language capability, I don't know. Some standards that say, okay, after 20 years, you have to be able to do this, have a good record, no felonies, and then you are able to qualify to begin the citizenship process. It could have been resolved. It was so close to being resolved under Bush, and it could have been resolved under Obama. And if we get a president who truly wants to solve immigration, we'll solve it. Now, the thing we got to recognize, we got a lot bigger problems than people are willing to risk their lives to come here and work. Okay, that's not an existential issue. That's a problem we need to deal with. The threat of terrorism certainly can be made more acute by having open borders. So we have to deal with the border issue. You can't solve the immigration problem until you deal with the border issue. Now, I think there are a lot better technological solutions to building a wall, but we have to control our borders. You can't be a country without border control.
Does the harsh rhetoric that's now travels with the immigration issue, where you talk about not letting certain people come to this country, does that set back the idea of when the timeline for when we can actually resolve this issue, do you think, Mr. Ramirez?
You know, I think they're two separate issues.
Okay.
Muslim integration and immigration through our south border are two fundamentally different things. Okay, Muslim integration is a much more complex issue. You have two refugees, and you have the potential for a small percent to truly be people that have been radicalized, mm-hmm. and they can do enormous damage. So I think this vetting issue is a real issue, and I think most Americans, would tell you in private that, yeah, we got to figure out how to vet the people who come to this country from countries that could be countries where they were radicalized. The risk is huge, is big.
Okay.
One person, as you've seen here lately, can do a lot of damage.
Okay.
So we have to do something that's better than we've done before. At the same time, we have to recognize there are two refugees, particularly women and children. And I would, by the way, set the different standard for women and children than I would for males 18 to 30.
Men.
There's a different level of risk.
Okay. Well, we're here to talk about your vision for the school, so I guess maybe my final question is, would St. Augustine Prep, is that modeled after any other school in America? Are you, in terms of scope and vision, having a national model here, sir?
No, we're creating one.
You are creating one.
Right.
There's no other similar school.
I don't know. I haven't done any research. We have gone and benchmarked a lot of schools around the country. We've probably visited 30 or 40 schools to benchmark what they do.
Okay.
But what we're putting together, to my knowledge, hasn't been done before.
Okay. And you're under construction. You've broken ground. The steel's going to be up. And you're going to be opening with how many students in the fall?
500 in fall 2017.
And
August is 2017.
August of 2017. And it'll be K through what?
Well, as I said, K through second, sixth grade, and ninth grade.
Sixth and ninth. Wow.
And we'll add 1 year to elementary school, 1 year to middle school, 1 year to high school every year.
And this,
so every year we'll add 150 students.
Well, you had major successes with Husco, but this sounds like something that you really are looking forward to as a personal goal.
No, it's another business.
Another business. Thank you.
The business of saving young people.
Thank you. Gus Ramirez, chairman of Husco, and talking about his vision for St. Augustine Prep Academy at 2707 South 5th Street in Milwaukee. Sir, thank you so much for talking to Wisconsin Eye.
Enjoy very much, Steve.
Thank you.